You may begin.
Good morning, everyone. I hereby call this meeting of the Michigan State University Board of Trustees to order. Our first order of business is approval of a proposed agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion? All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? The agenda is approved. Our next order of business is approval of the minutes from October 30th, 2020. Is there a motion to approve the October 30th, 2020 meeting minutes?
So moved.
Thank you. Second?
Support.
Thank you. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? The minutes are approved. Our next order of business is public participation led by Board Secretary Nakia Barr.
We will now proceed to the public participation portion of the meeting. Each individual who has signed up to speak will have 3 minutes to address the board. Your time will end when the buzzer sounds. Any responses from board members will come during the trustee comment portion of the meeting. We will now hear from Jack Hiss, followed by Peter Corsetti. Please activate the first speaker.
Hello, my name is Jack Hiss, and I'm a current sophomore on the Michigan State swimming and diving team. Now I'm here to express my displeasure of the termination of our program. Not only for me, but for my team, the extensive alumni base culminated over 99 years, and the countless friends and family and extensive network of the worldwide swimming community that this affects. Now, my understanding is that it was made to apparent to this board of trustees that our pool was deemed ineligible per NCAA standards. But I want to assure you that it is within the guidelines of 25 yards. That is, has, and for the foreseeable future, is the standard for competing in swimming. The pool located in the IM West, where my team spends countless hours, that pool is 25 yards, and thus is competition ready. I also would like to make it apparent that the wool has been pulled over your eyes on this issue by the athletic department and AD Bill Beekman, because you were led to believe our pool was inadequate, and this could have factored into the decision of our team meeting its end. I would like to look at another point made about the reasoning for our teams being cut, as the facilities of the IM West had renovations done into our scoreboard and locker room areas just only 2 years ago. Then why were we told the thought of cutting the swimming and diving team has been in the works for 5+ years? Why do renovations there if you thought you would cut the team? To fully understand the severity of the decision, I would ask you to envision yourself as a high school senior, already signed to come be a Spartan athlete for swimming and diving. Now you receive the news the program's been cut, and you have now 2 weeks before National Signing Day, and now you must scramble to find a new program in which you can compete. Will there be any scholarship left there? Will that athlete ever realize their dreams? For me personally, I now don't have the opportunity to realize my dreams, and for my teammates to realize theirs. We signed up knowing full well what the pool was like, and we were prepared to work as hard as we could to do right by university for our teammates, coaches, and ourselves. You, as the university, have not done right by us. You have stripped us of this amazing student athlete experience that is so boasted and talked about. Now I understand for us to meet our goal, we must work together. We have pleaded with AD Bill Beekman, President Stanley, and this board for cooperation, and we will continue to do so because our goal is to not attack this board, but to save our sport. But I would ask as I come to my close, if you're not going to take it from me, a Spartan athlete, then take it from the words published by this Board of Trustees mission statement. Please ask yourself, are you providing outstanding undergraduate, graduate, and professional education to promising qualified students in order to prepare them to contribute fully to society as globally engaged citizen leaders? With your decision, are you setting a good example of how to treat young adults and student athletes? Thank you for your time and go green.
Thank you. Next, we will hear from. Thank you. Next, we will hear from Peter Corsetti, followed by Travis Nikevich. Please activate the next speaker.
Hello, can you hear me?
You may begin.
Hi, my name is Peter Corsetti. I'm a current sophomore on the swimming and diving team, and I would like to cover why the swimming and diving team is a valuable asset to Michigan State and should be fully reinstated immediately. From my understanding, the decision to discontinue the men's and women's swimming and diving team is due to COVID-19. The current closure and restrictions at Michigan State and throughout the state are temporary and will eventually be rescinded. The easing of restrictions will be accelerated through Pfizer and Moderna vaccine distribution, breakthroughs in therapeutics, as well as future deployment of additional vaccines that are currently in development. Within 6 to 12 months, we could be looking at a much improved situation than we currently find ourselves. Students have felt the impacts of COVID-19 restrictions in a number of significant ways. Recent CDC data states 1 in 4 young adults between 18 and 24 say they've considered suicide over the past month because of the pandemic. Although Michigan State has provided different supportive resources for student athletes to get help with mental illness, there may be a long-term mental health effect that are a result of this life-changing decision for the members of this team. What is a Michigan State swimmer? Michigan State swimmers are some of the most dedicated, hardworking student athletes on campus. Between our practice schedule and our team GPAs, we prove this to be true. In spring 2020, the women's team term GPA was 3.86, and the men's was 3.82. Additionally, 16 swimmers and divers earned a perfect 4.0 GPA. Plus, 43 of MSU's 97 winter sport academic All Big Ten honorees in 2019-2020 were from the swimming and diving program. Part of this success is due to the team culture and values instilled by upperclassmen and the coaching staff. Through this, we can see the quality of students the sport of swimming attracts. At Michigan State, we say Spartans will. Here are some examples of what the Spartan swim and dive team has done and will continue to do. 25 Olympians spanning back to the 1940s. 30 swimmers and divers combined for both men's and women's teams were named as 2019-2020 Big Ten Distinguished Scholar Award recipients. This recognition raises the stature of Michigan State University among their Big Ten peers, as well as collegiate programs nationally. Two male swimmers received the President's Award, and most recently, Scott Piper receiving the Wayne Duke Postgraduate Scholarship in 2020. He was the only Spartan to ever receive that award. Within our alumni network includes an astrophysicist, doctors, CFOs, CEOs, lawyers, teachers, web designers, business owners, and that's just to name a few. This is more than a sport. I hope that you all can see this as current team members and alumni work together passionately to preserve this legendary 99-year program that have lived our motto of Spartans Will. Thank you and go green.
Thank you. Next, we will hear from Travis Nikevich, followed by Jim Bertruth.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, you may begin.
Hello, I am Travis Nikevich, current sophomore and member of the swim team. I will be providing reasoning to reverse the decision to cut the swim and dive programs and to upgrade IM facilities. First, based on last year's budgeting, MSU Swim and Dive brings in a net $1.3 million annually for the university as a whole, primarily through tuition. These athletes would not choose to attend MSU without this program, as evidenced by our recruits and our freshmen looking to transfer to other schools. Why cut a team that brings in over $1 million annually? Switching gears, ASMSU, the student government, represents all MSU students. ASMSU has unanimously passed a bill condemning the decision to cut swim and dive programs. This shows the student body condemns this decision. Additionally, MSU's IM facilities, excluding the outdoor pool, are functional but outdated and lagging behind many other schools. MSU's rec facilities budget was $2.78 million last year. The rest of the Big Ten, excluding Northwestern and Rutgers due to a lack of data, spent an average of $14.82 million last year on rec facilities. That is over 5 times more than MSU every year. The argument against upgrading MSU's IM/rec facilities is that it is unfair on the students to raise tuition. Yet, ASMSU, who represents all students, unanimously passed a resolution supporting upgrading facilities via an increase in tuition, giving all students access to significantly benefit student health and wellness. A new IM facility would not only help all of MSU athletics, but it would also help the entire student body as they would all get access to this new facility. Furthermore, MSU requires 2 years of on-campus living now, so this would further support campus life. Additionally, this would be a great revenue source, both with the continual extra tuition money, but also from participation of the greater Lansing area through community engagement and age group competitions. For example, hosting a youth state championship swim meet. Between the money brought in, potential for new facilities, still having a regulation-sized indoor pool, fantastic team GPAs, MSU Swim and Dive should not be cut. With the full support of the student body, IM facilities should be upgraded, assisting not only the swim team, but also the student body and university as a whole. Lastly, switching topics, the Athletic Council. Based on the Board of Trustees bylaws, Duty 12, the Athletic Council should, quote, determine what sports shall be a part of the intercollegiate athletic program, end quote. Yet, not once this year or last year was cutting a program discussed at an Athletic Council meeting. The continued lack of transparency and integrity of the athletic department makes you wonder how exactly this decision was reached and why was the board and athletic council not involved. Please reconsider this decision and please consider upgrading facilities in a way that includes swim and dive in its future. Thank you.
Thank you. Jim Bertruce is not present. Next, we will hear from Lauren Phillip. Please activate the next speaker.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. You may begin.
Hello, everyone. My name is Lauren Phillip, and I am the elected secretary of the class of 2024 in the Michigan State University College of Veterinary Medicine. On behalf of the CVM classes of 2023 and 2024, we are formally requesting a 30% tuition reimbursement for both classes while virtual learning is ongoing or as it continues during our professional program. We strongly believe our tuition must reflect the current circumstances we are facing and will continue to face if we receive doctorate degrees online. The fact that we value a quality education does not mean we should have to endure further personal, financial, and mental hardships, along with trying to maintain adequate grades to be successful. Many out-of-state students are over $300,000 in debt, and our wages as doctors do not reflect this burden. Many of us will pay off our loans into early retirement. This financial turmoil is recognized by the diverse members of our class's supporters, as our petition for tuition reimbursement has received approximately 1,065 signatures, 9,476 views, and 300 shares from the MSU community. The members of the community recognize the immense weight of the cost of education has on its students and demands transparency as to why the quality of our education has decreased, but the price remains the same. The future of our professional careers, public health, advanced clinical research, our patients' healthcare, and the future of veterinary medicine are dependent on our ability to be knowledgeable and skilled doctors. We demand rightful financial compensation and transparency for enduring the adversity we face and will continue to face during our education. My class came to Michigan State thinking we would be participating in a hybrid class structure, only to be told we would be going completely online 4 days into the semester. This has been extremely frustrating for me and my fellow classmates, especially since the CVM had ample time to prepare for the semester over the summer. Even with time to plan, the online course structure has been less than ideal and seemingly very disorganized. While most professors have been very accommodating, my class believes we are not getting the promised education for which we are paying a significant amount of money. Along with this, there is currently no solid plan for remediating first year required labs. While I recognize that undergraduate students are also online, undergraduate versus graduate and professional education are very different in terms of class content, organization, and material required. Veterinary school is required to prepare myself and my classmates for our future careers as doctors. Many of us recognize that we are not being adequately prepared to be veterinarians. I understand this is a difficult time for everyone, and many of us are doing the best we can. It is absolutely reasonable for us to demand 30% of our tuition to be reimbursed based on the previously discussed points. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, we will hear from Brianna Demeline, followed by Joshika Shande. Please activate the next speaker.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. You may begin.
All right. My name is Brianna Demeline, and I am a second year veterinary medicine student at the College of Veterinary Medicine. When the recent news of the trustee approval of $10.6 million renovations for the Veterinary Medical Center for the quote, health, safety, and educational experience for students was released, the students that you sought to help felt waves of emotion crash over them. Myself and my classmates felt this to be yet another blow to their trust in Michigan State University. We have been told repeatedly that no tuition reductions will take place, as the university simply cannot afford it. How can the trustees grant a $10.6 million renovation yet tell students that their financial health and compensation is not as important? The students, your students, who are being impacted by the situation at hand today will never see these renovations. By focusing on the future, you are losing sight of the students who are currently going $200,000 to greater than $400,000 in debt while receiving a lesser education, losing crucial hands-on experiences, and carrying the stress of their school, who they thought would advocate on their behalf, using them for their tuition during these trying times. We understand that what we ask is a great financial burden and that the university is a business. However, the solution is not to punish your students, your future doctors, and take advantage of them during these uncertain times. We expect our university to treat students fairly and with justice. Unfortunately, the classes of 2023 and 24 believe that Michigan State University has fallen below the line. While the other medical schools of MSU have created a hybrid education for their students, the College of Veterinary Medicine has not for the classes of 2023 and 2024. We have been asked to receive a lesser education in quality and quantity far more than other programs. What does this tell future doctors of veterinary medicine graduating from MSU? That we are not a priority. We do not deserve financial compensation, and that once again, MSU will use its students to their advantage. These feelings of doubt, mistrust, and loss of support were only amplified when Michigan State University announced that they would bring back football. Football has been prioritized over the future of veterinary graduates and is unacceptable. Players have received continued support despite positive cases and health risk while also receiving regular COVID-19 testing. Where is this testing for veterinary students? Where is the financial support? Where does this leave the current doctorate students? It leaves them in a place of uncertainty, further unjust debt, and acknowledgement that MSU does not support their students equally. It is with this that we demand rightful financial compensation for the inadequate education that we have and continue to receive. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, we will hear from Joshika Shande, followed by Emily Trutter.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. You may begin.
Hello, my name is Joshika Shande, and I'm elected class secretary for the DVM class of 2023. The price to attend veterinary school at Michigan State already has one of the highest price tags in the nation, but promised integrative hands-on experience and clinical-based knowledge made the price tag well worth it. Due to current circumstances, we no longer have the hands-on experience we were promised, can no longer work in anatomy and clinical skill labs, and essentially, we are losing a large, substantial amount of our educational experience. Additionally, at the start of the semester, over 200 members of the CVM spent several hundreds of thousands of dollars to move back to Michigan, pay rent, and buy the necessary supplies needed for in-person classes. However, 4 days into the semester, we were abruptly informed that having in-person classes was no longer a reality, and we had to continue online for the rest of the semester. Although we understand and appreciate the measures the CVM has taken to keep us safe, this wasted money could have been spent to support their families and used for other essential life needs. Money that could mean life or death during these times. I would like to highlight Article 1.5.3 of the Graduate Student Handbook that has been violated. This article states that student rights and responsibilities shall be made public in an appropriate manner. The decision to go online was made 4 days into the semester and was definitely not done in a timely manner. The decisions made also violated Article 2.3.3, which states each graduate student has the right to receive accurate information concerning the future of their program. In actuality, this administration has no clear plan for the future, as proven by this current semester. We were not given transparency about the progression of our education after this decision was made without our input. Finally, Article 2.3.12 states graduate students are protected from personal exploitation by administration. Since we have not been provided with written documentation of how our tuition is being spent during these dynamic times, we are unable to ascertain whether or not we are being exploited. Since we are unable to currently practice crucial technical skills necessary for day one ready licensed veterinarians, we know the tuition amount we are currently paying is unfair and unreasonable. We are formally requesting a tuition reimbursement of 30% for the fall 2020 and spring 2021, 21 semesters, as well as a reimbursement to the class of 2023 for the online time of the spring 2020 semester. We are open to negotiating the terms presented and look forward to working with you. We request our formal response by the Board of Trustees by January 4th, 2021. Thank you so much for your time and your ears.
Thank you. Next, we will hear from Emily Trutter, followed by Kaylee Hodges.
Hello, my name is Emily Trutter, and I've asked to speak to the Board of Trustees today because I am deeply concerned by the actions of Trustee Scott in the aftermath of the Nassar situation. Trustee Scott ran a reform. She ran on commitment to change, to healing, to reform, to ensure something like the Nassar sexual abuse scandal will never again to be tolerated on this campus. Yet it has become increasingly clear that Trustee Scott's motives were anything but. Trustee Scott sold out survivors. She sold out Michigan State students and faculty alike, and she sold out the entire Spartan community at large. She had the audacity to accuse the survivors of benefiting financially from an independent investigation to look into this institution's handling of the Nassar abuse, while she has been cutting back end deals to enrich herself with the Muskegon deal. Trustee Scott obstructed an independent investigation to line her own pockets. After running on reform, she sold her vote to the highest bidder. Her actions are shameful. Instead of working to help survivors heal from one of the most traumatic experiences in their lives, Trustee Scott decided to use this opportunity to betray them for a real estate bid. Her actions are reprehensible. I can't help but wonder, does the mental soundness, the safety, the security of survivors, does it mean that little to Trustee Scott? Are survivors nothing more than a quick paycheck to Trustee Scott? Does the innocence and sanctity of young girls mean nothing? The students are wondering, the students she was elected to serve, they're wondering how much of her own money did Trustee Scott put into the Muskegon deal? How much did Joel Ferguson put into this deal? How much money did it take for her to compromise her integrity and her promises to survivors? Trustee Scott ran on lies and false promises. She has betrayed survivors. She has worked to protect the institution. She had failed the entire Spartan community. And in doing so, she has perpetuated rape culture and enabled sexual assault. She has embarrassed this institution and let it down. The students of Michigan State University are calling for her resignation. Trustee Scott is unfit to lead. There's no way this board or the university is ready for change if Brianna Scott is still selling out survivors.
Thank you. Next, we will hear from Kaylee Hodges, followed by Shannon Hill. Please activate the next speaker.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. You may begin.
Hello. My name is Kaylee Hodges, and I am a student at Michigan State University. Throughout these last few years, I've watched as survivors of the Nassar abuse have come forth with their brave stories, facing their abuser and the attacks, the ridicule, the shame, and the lies they have been forced to stand by and listen to. I have watched as the Spartan community work to reconcile this trauma and move Michigan State forward while doing everything they can to help survivors heal and reclaim their narrative. However, I'm addressing you today because I am deeply disheartened by the lack of leadership I've witnessed by this board. We have members of this board running on reform, then turning their backs on survivors for a pretty penny. We have members like Brianna Scott buying off buildings in the Muskegon deal, trading in their votes to roadblock an independent investigation for truth. Corruption is skyrocketing, and despite all of this, Diane Byram has continuously failed to protect survivors. She has repeatedly worked to undermine survivors struggling to heal from the immense trauma they have endured. Diane Byram appointed Brianna Scott to run the Survivors Healing Fund, which has been a complete and utter disaster. Survivors have struggled with their claims, and they haven't been able to receive any of the financial restitution promised. It has been an uphill, arduous battle with red tape bureaucracy at every turn. This is a direct result of Trustee Byram's horrendous leadership. Through her negligence, it has become very evident that Diane is unfit to lead. Diane Byram did not say a word as Trustee Scott was bought off with a building, hindering an independent investigation seeking truth, only to promote herself and protect her vote and power. She is unfit to make decisions to move this institution forward. If this board says we are serious about reform, we have a decision to make on January 13th. This board will show us if you are really looking for reform or if they are simply looking for another yes man like Diane Byram to protect the institution. I am asking you to stand up and make the right choice. Protect your students. Protect our survivors. Protect the people you were elected to represent. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we will hear from Shannon Hill, followed by Michelle Weisbrod.
I'm addressing this board today because I am beyond frustrated with the lack of leadership and transparency from this board. One would think that with the onslaught of the Nassar sexual abuse scandal would motivate this board to do everything in their power to support survivors and to help reform Michigan State University so nothing like this will ever happen again. And yet it seems as though there is a concerted effort to undermine all healing and retribution for survivors. From Brianna Scott, a trustee whose very election platform was based on reform, selling out survivors, and obstructing the independent investigation for her own personal gain with the Muskegon deal, to her leadership managing the unfortunate disaster of a healing fund, where survivors have not been able to file their claims or access their just compensation. It seems as though Trustee Scott is intent on using her role on this board as a personal playground for her own financial gain. She has used and abused her privileges and made it a point to consistently undermine any and all efforts to protect survivors of Larry Nassar's sexual assault. Furthermore, to add insult to injury, this despicable behavior has been enabled by Diane Byram's failing leadership. Diane chose to appoint Brianna Scott to head the Healing Fund and chose to look the other way when Brianna Scott was bought off with the Muskegon deal in order to protect her vote. I share this with you today to express my deep disappointment in this board and its leadership and ask you that you do better and hold one another accountable moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we will hear from Michelle Weisbrod, followed by Ashley Weisbrod. Please activate the next speaker.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. You may begin.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Michelle Weisbrod, and I am a member of Parents of Sister Survivors Engage, also known as POSSE. My daughter, Ashley, is a sister survivor. I am speaking today to encourage the board to once again allow reimbursement for service dogs under the Healing Fund. Ashley has been seeing a mental health professional for several years now, learning to cope with the after effects of her abuse. Some of the effects include panic attacks, feeling like she always has to watch her surroundings, disassociating, and nightmares. Her grades in school remarkably dropped as she felt she couldn't listen to what the teacher was saying and constantly watch everyone around her to make sure they weren't going to approach her. She became overwhelmed in crowds and had anxiety whenever people got too close to her. She would also have flashbacks and disassociate, meaning she was not aware of what was going on around her and couldn't speak. Her nightmares meant she was getting no more than 4 hours of sleep a night every night. Her life was unbearable to her, and it was heartbreaking and painful to watch as a parent. 2 years ago, her doctor recommended a service dog for her. We did research and decided to go forward with finding a dog for her and training it. This decision was a difficult one to make, as service dogs are very expensive and require a lot of time to train. However, knowing that it could help Ashley, we felt we had to try. In December 2018, we picked up Ashley's service puppy in training, a silver Labrador she named Mochi, who had been temperament and personality tested and found to have just the right temperament for service work. Mochi immediately began training at just 3 months old. He is a quick learner and eager to please. He has made an absolutely remarkable impact on Ashley's life. Mochi began attending school with Ashley in 2019. He knows how to sit or stand between her and other people so as to provide Ashley with a protective space around her. He can tell when she is about to have a panic attack and provides deep pressure therapy, lying on her until the panic subsides. He also has an innate ability to determine when she is disassociating and will lick her face until she is aware of her surroundings again. He can sense a nightmare and wake her from it, greatly improving her quality of sleep. To say that Mochi has helped Ashley is an understatement. 2 years ago, I was crawling under restroom stalls at restaurants and stores, trying to ease her panic and get her out after she would run to them and lock herself in when someone would get too close to her. She was missing days and days of school due to anxiety and panic attacks. My husband and I were picking her up early from school several days a month when she would dissociate and couldn't talk. Now she and Mochi are involved in clubs and activities and go out confidently into the world. We wish a service dog had been available to her sooner. She is a completely different person. She is now confident, sleeps well, and has a 4.0 this semester of her senior year of high school. We have not had any vet bills or any other training for some that can reach up to over $40,000 reimbursed since the new healing fund has begun. We have made sacrifices in order to afford Mochi. I hope that the board has a clearer understanding now of what a trained service dog is. Please reconsider and have service dogs again covered under the healing fund. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we will hear from Ashley Wisebrod, followed by Brian Tarrant.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. You may begin.
Good morning, and thank you for allowing me to speak. My name is Ashley Wisebrod. I am a senior at Okemos High School, and I am a sister survivor. I am taking time out of class today to describe to you how my service dog, Mochi, helps me on a daily basis. Since getting Mochi 2 years ago, my quality of life has improved tremendously. I am able to be present in school and be a member of society. Before Mochi, I would spend days where I could not function because of my fear and lack of trust in people. My panic attacks were happening daily, and my lack of sleep because of nightmares was consistent. The first night I had Mochi, I didn't have a single nightmare and was able to get my first full night's rest in weeks. Mochi is trained to wake me up from nightmares, provide deep pressure therapy, block me from crowds, notice when I'm dissociating and bring me back to reality, notify me to panic attacks before they begin, and so much more. Mochi goes everywhere with me, to school, to the grocery store, and when we can again, he will go on vacations with me. Mochi to me is what a wheelchair is to someone who can't walk. To be clear, Mochi is not my pet. He is my service dog. I have 4 dogs, including Mochi, at home, and only 3 of them are pets. The benefits of a service animal can help so many survivors if only the resources were there for them. A service animal can cost upwards of $40,000 in its lifetime. If even a fraction of the cost, such as the purchase and training cost, is reimbursed, so many more survivors can have access to something that could change their lives. For myself and many others, having a service animal is one of the bare necessities in our lives. If I did not have Mochi, I would not be the same person I am today. Without Mochi, I could very possibly not be here today. The lack of coverage for service animals by the Healing Fund is denying survivors the ability to be functional members of society and quite possibly harming their quality of life. The board should reinstate coverage for service animals through the Healing Fund. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Brian Tarrant is not present. Next, we will hear from Valerie Von Frank. Please activate the next speaker.
Good morning. I'm here as a representative of parents of Sister Survivors Engage. I'm really sad to be back here today, just about a month before the 3rd anniversary of Larry Nassar's sentencing for sexually assaulting more than 500 young girls and women. Much has changed in our lives since then. Much has not. We're reaching out to you today to discuss institutional betrayal, but more importantly, institutional courage. Dr. Jennifer Fried, professor of sociology at the University of Oregon, is renowned for her theories of institutional betrayal and betrayal trauma. She defines institutional betrayal as the wrongdoings an institution perpetuates upon individuals who depend on that institution, including failure to prevent or respond supportively to wrongdoings by individuals, for example, in cases of sexual assault, committed within the context of the institution. Institutional courage, on the other hand, is the antidote. It includes institutional accountability and transparency. I don't want to belabor the pain caused by institutional betrayal here, but it's time for a new approach for institutional courage, for accountability and transparency. One example of institutional courage from a recent newsletter by the Center for Institutional Courage talks about an Australian Royal Commission appointed to look into sexual abuse across the country against children. This commission ran from 2013 to 2017 and heard from more than 8,000 adult survivors who testified in writing or verbally about their stories and what their experiences had been. They described being treated by the commission like the queen, at each step of the process, from the first phone call to a personally signed thank you card after they spoke, the Royal Commission impressed upon survivors their importance and the worth of their testimony. The Commission created processes and spaces in which survivors felt not just safe, but valued as they described their experiences. The Commission allied itself with the survivors. The center said, sexual violence and institutional betrayal are deeply embodied experiences. They are saturated in shame and humiliation in particular. The Royal Commission offered survivors an opposing experience. We hope that MSU may transform after the actions of the last few years and will create dignity, accountability, and transparency. Restore dignity to survivors who asked you in August and followed up in October on needed changes to the Healing Fund. We still, 4 months later, have not heard your final answer. We've had to ask over and over again for you to honor your public promises. Over the last 2 years, you've made survivors have to beg for relief. Be accountable. We thank Dan Kelly and Kelly T. Bay, who supported an independent investigation, along with Brian Masalam and Nancy Schlichting. But this board as a whole failed in its work with survivor representatives to agree to an outside investigation. The case of what happened at this institution is not settled. An internal investigation is not a substitute for outside eyes. And be transparent. The board itself asked the state's attorney general to open an investigation.
That concludes public participation.
Thank you very much. The next order of business is my report. And I want to begin by thanking all those we heard from in the public comments part of our agenda today. I know it's very difficult to come forward and speak, but thank you for doing that. Today is the last day of exams weeks for the fall 2020 semester, a semester that has been challenging in many different ways. But more than 2,600 students have earned undergraduate and graduate degrees under very difficult circumstances. We're celebrating those graduates with special webcasts today and tomorrow on MSU's commencement website, and I encourage you to attend. We have three highly accomplished alumni as speakers. Marta Tienda, Professor of Sociology and Public Affairs at Princeton University, addresses our doctoral degree recipients. Todd Penegor, President and CEO of Wendy's, will speak at the master's degree ceremony. And former Spartan standout and NBA champion Draymond Green will address baccalaureate degree recipients. We're looking forward to honoring graduates in person later when we can safely do so. I also have some good news to share today about MSU's graduation rates. MSU's 6 years graduation rate rose more than half a percentage point to 81.3% this year. We've seen increases every year the last 6 years, and that's a significant accomplishment. Among groups this year, we saw the rate for African Americans or Black students increase 2 percentage points. It rose 3 percentage points for Hispanic Latinx students. It's up 7 percentage points for Asian students. It rose 11 points for Hawaiian Pacific Islander students, and it increased 14 percentage points for American Indian and Alaska Native students. And it also rose 2 percentage points for international students. We're very happy to see all those increases, but we know we have more work to do. And the provost and their team have been working very hard to support students and close achievement gaps among underrepresented groups. We also announced that we will reinstate our 2-year campus residency requirement to further enhance MSU student support. The requirement has been waived since the 1980s, but will restart with next fall's first year entering class. The research we've done and the evidence that we've collected is absolutely clear. Students living on campus their first 2 years have significantly higher graduation rates than those living on campus only 1 year. For all students, it's about 2.4 percentage points, but for some student groups, the difference is much, much greater, particularly in minoritized student groups. We're so proud of all our students at MSU, our graduates and those who are working towards their degrees, and student success is a critical part of our work going forward. I also want to offer congratulations now to two very successful students who are in highly competitive scholarships. Honors College senior Brent Strong, a College of Natural Science physiology major, is Michigan State University's 20th Marshall Scholar. That scholarship supports up to 3 years of study in the United Kingdom. Mesa Sitar, an Honors College senior in the College of Social Science, is just the 5th Spartan to be named a Mitchell Scholar. The Mitchell Scholarship goes to 12 undergraduates nationwide and funds a year of study in Ireland. I also want to take note, and we'll talk about them later, of the 29 graduating seniors this semester who recorded cumulative 4.0 GPAs at MSU. And I know, and we all know, that's a remarkable achievement. I'm also very proud of MSU's talented faculty, several of whom were honored recently by their peers. 9 were recognized as being among the most highly cited researchers in the world in 2020. And 4 faculty members were named fellows by the American Association for the Advancement of Science. I want to congratulate all of them, and you can read about them online at MSU Today. And MSU economist Lisa Cook was selected to serve on President-elect Joe Biden's transition team. She's helping review agencies with the transition Federal Reserve Banking and Security Regulators Group. Another honor to mention for the university itself. MSU was recognized for the 3rd year for entrepreneurship education by the Princeton Review. MSU rose to number 14 among the top 25 programs in the US. Princeton Review also ranks MSU among the nation's most environmentally responsible colleges and universities. These recognitions are well earned, and MSU is also continuing our work to become a leader in prevention and response to relationship violence and sexual misconduct. We recently opened our sexual assault healthcare program, a free first response resource for survivors of sexual assault. It's the first such on-campus program in the nation. It was recommended by our RBSM expert advisory work group as we work to comprehensively address sexual assault at MSU. Looking to spring semester, we're continuing to monitor the pandemic and work with the state to keep our community safe. I continue to be so grateful for the university community's response to the need to continue adapting to the challenges posed by the pandemic. Remarkably, through the efforts of our amazing students, faculty, and staff, we have been able to carry on MSU's mission and our vital research, scholarship, innovation, and creative work in the midst of the outbreak. The vaccine advances are so encouraging. My eldest daughter, who works on the front lines on COVID-19, received her first dose of the vaccine yesterday, so I can definitely see light at the end of the tunnel. But as we think about spring, we must maintain the key actions to prevent transmission: mask wearing, social distancing, avoiding indoor gatherings, while awaiting the completion of the most ambitious vaccination program in US history. So we're implementing additional safety measures for spring semester. Undergraduates returning to campus for any reason are being asked to get a flu vaccine, although we are allowing exceptions. Everyone who can should get a flu shot this season to reduce morbidity and mortality from flu, to avoid dual infections, which could be quite dangerous, and to prevent the overwhelming of our health systems. Students returning to East Lansing are also being told to quarantine and to continue monitoring themselves for COVID-19 symptoms. And undergraduates who will be on campus for any reason will be required to participate in our COVID-19 early detection testing program. This will include testing upon their return to campus and at regular intervals afterwards. We're encouraging faculty, staff, and off-campus students to participate in the screening program too. Of course, we continue to work to help in the state's response to the pandemic. MSU experts are using new grant funding to help expand testing for the novel coronavirus in wastewater in Detroit and around the state, which can provide communities warning about the presence of COVID-19. I'm also pleased to note that the College of Human Medicine's Dr. Mona Hanna-Attisha was selected to serve on the state's Protect Michigan Commission to support educational efforts around COVID-19 vaccination. Hers will be a trusted voice to help guide this critical public health program. And I want to give a shout out to more than 40 College of Nursing fall graduates who will soon be joining the front lines of healthcare as our nurse and physician graduates did last spring. These and other Spartans are continuing to step up to serve at a critical time, and I can't think of better examples of what it means to be a Spartan. I now want to mention a longtime Spartan leader who has wrapped up his career at MSU. Jim Cotter, who was most recently was director of the Varsity S Club and in the athletics department, led the Office of Admissions as part of a 36-year career at MSU. Jim has the title of Executive Director of Admissions Emeritus for his years of distinguished service, and I offer my thanks for his work and wish him the best. Finally, as we end the year, we're also saying goodbye to 2 trustees who are finishing their tenure on the board, Brian Masalem and Joe Ferguson. The board resolutions will provide a much fuller accounting of their impressive resumes and significant accomplishments, so I will keep my comments brief. But both trustees have been extraordinarily helpful to me since I arrived at MSU, and their service and commitment to the university has been absolutely clear. I came to know Brian as a proud Spartan who has been committed to service to his alma mater. He was a highly accomplished student athlete in MSU, and I was surprised to learn not that he graduated cum laude in engineering arts, but he played the offensive line for the Spartans. On the board, he focused on student welfare and was a staunch advocate for all of the MSU community. Both students and faculty have praised him for his responsiveness to their issues. I know he always stood up for what he thought was right, and as he said, always acted in a way that would make his mother and father proud. Joel Ferguson, also a proud Spartan, is MSU's longest serving trustee, and as I learned, a powerful and influential presence in Michigan's business, civic, and political communities. Even before I officially started, Joel was instrumental in introducing me to many civic leaders in Michigan and helped me greatly in understanding key issues in the community. His knowledge and experience made him a go-to person for me in understanding how Michigan State works, and I greatly appreciate his mentorship. Trustees Masalam and Ferguson, you both bleed green, and I thank you for your support and your service to MSU. I know you continue to show your extraordinary devotion to Michigan State University, and I look forward to working with you both in the future. This ends my remarks, and I will conclude by wishing everyone who is with us today and throughout the Spartan community a safe and happy holiday season. We will now move to the gift and grant contract report from Interim Vice President for Research and Innovation, Doug Gage.
Morning, Chairperson Byram, members of the Board of Trustees, I request approval of the awards found in the gift, grant, and contract report. The report period is from August 14th, 2020 through November 16th, 2020. The total value for this period is $193,048,282.
Is there a motion to approve the gift, grant, and contract report?
I'll move.
Thank you. Could I have a second?
Support.
Thank you. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? The gift, grant, and contract report is approved. Now we will move on to our research presentation.
One of my great honors in the role of Vice President is to highlight the research and scholarship of our faculty. Today, we will hear from Professor Emilio Moran of the Department of Geography in the College of Social Science. Emilio Moran joined MSU in January of 2013 as a Hanna Distinguished Professor associated with the Center for Global Change and Earth Observation and the Center for System Integration and Sustainability. He was, until 2012, Distinguished Professor in the James H. Ruddy Professor of Anthropology at Indiana University. Professor Moran is the author of 11 books, 16 edited volumes, and more than 200 journal articles and book chapters. His research has been funded by the NSF, the National Institutes of Health, NOAA, and NASA for the past three decades. He currently holds four major NSF grants, totaling nearly $7.8 million. His three latest books, Environmental Social Science, People and Nature, a second edition, and Human Adaptability from Westview, address broad issues of human interaction with the environment. He is a fellow of the Linnaean Society of London, a fellow of the American Association for the Advancement of Science, and was elected to the National Academy of Sciences in 2010. He was appointed to a six-year term on the National Science Board in 2016. In this role, he provides advice to the National Science Foundation and the nation on major decisions in science and technology. Professor Moran?
Hello, I hope you can hear me.
Yes.
I am delighted to be here and to share my research for the last 5 years since coming to MSU. I will speak today about the two most recent grants. One that is in the final year, funding research on food, water, energy issues in the Amazon basin. And then in October, we got news of a new five-year grant, also from the National Science Foundation, to continue that work that we started in the last 5 years. What we're trying to do in this research is to meet the needs of about 680 million people across the world that are off the grid, that don't have access to the national electrical system. I've been working on issues of infrastructure in the Amazon for more than 30 years. I started by looking at road building when they first started doing so to open up the Amazon to development. And it is the road building and homesteading that came along with it that drove much of the deforestation in the Amazon rainforest for the last 30 years. And that has been a focus of a lot of my work in the past that led to the National Academy election. 10 years ago, they started developing hydropower in the Amazon region. And I realized that perhaps now hydropower projects stood to transform that part of the world that we value so much in the rainforest, as much as road building did for the previous 30. So I began to address, look for funds to address those issues. Dam construction is different from road building in that it does not directly lead to deforestation, but it's associated with flooding of forests in the reservoir areas. And it also provides greater access to people moving in and cutting the forest. Environmentally, hydropower tends to disrupt fish migrations. It blocks the movement of sediment in the river and therefore impoverishes the river ecology. And it tends to devastate floodplain farming and fisheries as a result of blocking the river. Socially, perhaps the impacts are even greater. Population doubles near the construction area. Local facilities for public services are overwhelmed by the number of people that arrive to build the thing, and things like dengue fever, malaria, STDs, and violence run rampant. Hydropower is not something new to the Amazon. It's not new to the United States. There are a total of 82,000 dams in the US alone. 672 are considered large dams, and 2,000 of them are in Michigan. So it is an important issue, an important source of energy. It is no longer as big a source as it used to be. Once upon a time, back in the 30s, during the heyday of hydropower construction, it accounted for 40% of the US electrical supply. Today, it's only 9%, has been replaced by other sources. What is more common today in the US and in Europe is dam removal rather than its construction. To date, more than 3,000 dams have been removed in Sweden, Spain, Portugal, UK, Switzerland, France, and more than 500 dams have been removed in the US just in the period from 2006 to 2014. Just as we stopped building more large hydropower projects in North America and Europe, a tremendous boom construction began to occur in the global south and primarily in developing countries. An estimated 3,700 dams of more than 1 megawatt are planned or under construction at present. It is an important source of energy. It is renewable. However, as I've mentioned already, there is not entirely benign. Why the Amazon? Well, the Amazon is one of the largest hydropower systems in the world with a tremendous potential. 61% of the total potential for Brazil is in the Amazon basin. And our current project has been studying the three most important basins for hydropower production. And so our team of hydrologists and climatologists have been looking at the details of that climatic hydro connection and see how we might be able to benefit from all that potential hydropower, but without the huge social and environmental impacts that have been glossed over during much of the construction so far. And for Brazil, this is very important because second only to China, Brazil is most dependent in the world for its electrical supplies. Currently, 67% of its energy comes from hydropower. And the focus of our work for the last 5 years was the Belo Monte Dam in Brazil, in the Amazon region. It's the third largest in the world. Just to give you an idea of proportion, it is twice the size of the Grand Coulee Dam, the largest in the United States, and five times bigger than the Hoover Dam in Colorado. So this is a very large project, which has had enormous impacts, which is the subject of our study. We found that they had to resettle 22,000 people away from reservoir and river areas that would be flooded. The community supporting the building of the dam, doubling population in less than a year, leading to a tremendous increase in cost of living for the local population. It increased depression, the use of drugs. Public service was completely overwhelmed, and there was no improvement in the water and sanitary situation as was required by law from any new infrastructure development. The impacts were no less severe in the agrarian sector, which has been the focus of my work for many decades. Deforestation increased enormously with no reforestation associated with it. Land use did not change, mostly kept on the same trajectory, mostly focusing on cattle ranching and cocoa. There was tremendous decline in farm labor because much of the farm labor left to work in the dam, and therefore this led to a decline in food production in the agricultural sector, which meant that the area became more and more dependent upon food imports, which were very expensive. The one good thing to come out of it was a paving of roads that had been promised and never done before. And there was a big inflow of capital investment, but it was very brief for 5-6 years, and then that capital left. A tremendous focus of our work includes engineering. From the very beginning, I thought that to address the needs of off-grid communities, we need to find something better than dams that still can take advantage of the hydropower potential of that region. So our engineering team here from MSU has been working on developing an in-stream turbine. This would be a turbine that goes in the river without requiring a dam to produce energy, and that such a in-stream turbine would just float in the river, allowing the fish and boats to move along the river freely, or it could be encased in cement in a rock solid structure. And also the engineering team developed a new idea, which was not part of the original design, which was to develop solar farms floating on existing reservoirs. The advantage is that while an in-stream turbine can generate power throughout the day from the moving of water along the river, solar can produce energy during the daytime. And in a tropical region like the Amazon, there is tremendous amounts of solar power available, heretofore undeveloped. And this could provide more energy during the peak hours of daytime when more use of energy occurs. This solution is interesting because it means that we can meet the needs of local people who are off the grid and have no access to inexpensive energy, but also because it can produce energy for the national grid. So our engineering team has come up with a set of potential solutions, some for off-grid communities, others for on-grid communities, and also thinking about the financial interests of the hydro, of the energy sector, which means that we want to be able to combine the in-stream turbines in new sites and solar panels floating on existing dams once already built. This means that those solar panels can provide the production of energy to make up for any decline in the hydropower production that occurs during low water periods. For example, the dam that we have been studying is, as I mentioned, 11 gigawatts of power, but in fact, so far he has never produced more than 4.5 gigawatts because due to climate change, there has been a decline in river levels and they have not been able to produce energy to their full potential. Instead of building more dams to make up the difference between 4.5 and 11, we are proposing that these in-stream turbines and solar panels can more than make up for the difference, making any new dam construction unnecessary. So in short, our solutions are that our combined solution of solar and in-stream turbines can produce energy at 1/10 the cost of a similarly sized diesel generator, which is what people currently have when they're off the grid. Covering just 10% of existing dam reservoirs in the Amazon with floating panels would generate 30 gigawatts of power, which is more than twice the amount of energy that is expected to be produced by all the dams that are planned in the Amazon, which is 145 dams that are currently being planned for the region, which could devastate the river and the fisheries of that region of the world. We can also produce about 63% of the total energy plan from conventional hydropower. In the Amazon, it could be harnessed using the in-stream turbines. And we have a paper on ways to publication about this estimation. So our team of MSU scientists from social science, natural science, communications, and engineering have been working together to advance these solutions by working together in a very convergent manner, which is the focus of our new work in the next 5 years. Our innovative solutions for serving off-grid communities have potential to meet the needs not only of 200,000 households in Brazil, but of 650 million people across the globe, including parts of the US, who are currently saddled with expensive and unsustainable energy options. You can see some of this work in a recent paper in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science, and I thank you for your time today. I'm open to questions.
Doug, I think you're muted.
Thank you, Professor Moran. I apologize that his slides were not visible, but the trustees can refer to their printouts to see more about his work.
Oh, I wish somebody had told me.
It was a remarkable presentation, Dr. Moran. I'm so impressed by the work you're doing. And I think it really epitomizes some of the things we're trying to do at Michigan State. I mean, the scope and scale of this. And I think the fact that the source of renewable energy, hydroelectric power, which I think many people feel is at least it still remains an important solution. Some of the consequences of it that are unintended in terms of, as you've talked about, in terms of the dams and so on, I think make your solution obviously an elegant one when combining with solar power, which obviously makes tremendous sense in equatorial regions. So very excited about what you're doing, and I look forward to learning more. Congratulations.
Yeah, our team is very excited. I think NSF also is excited, which is why we have been successful twice in a row.
That's always important. That's very important to have the agencies excited as well. But it's great stuff. And again, thank you for sharing it today. If there's no other questions from any other questions from the board members or comments, thank you again. So we're going to move on now to personnel actions and information reports. Provost Woodruff.
Trustees, I present for approval the items in the December 2020 list of personnel actions. This includes the appointment of two new tenured faculty members, Dr. Antonio Galval, PhD, Professor, and Frederick S. Addy, Distinguished Chair in the Department of Economics, and Dr. Suman Basaroy, PhD, Professor in the Department of Marketing. The action also includes the appointment of Dr. Kendra Charuville, PhD, Professor in Lyman Briggs College as Interim Dean of Lyman Briggs College. In addition, I present for approval the appointment of Dr. Mary Fenn, PhD, Interim Dean, as Dean of the College of Social Science. The following actions also include tenure recommendations, which were delayed last spring, recommended by the department chairpersons, school directors, the deans, and the provost in accordance with the tenure rules. The following promotions include the award of tenure and are recommended to be effective January 1st, 2021. Dr. Chen-Shi Li, PhD, promotion to associate professor with tenure in the Department of Epidemiology and Biostatistics. Dr. Matthew Schrenk, PhD, promotion to associate professor with tenure in the Department of Earth and Environmental Sciences. Also included in your materials are information reports for academic personnel actions.
Thank you, Provost. Is there a motion to approve the personnel actions?
So move.
Thank you.
Is there a second?
Diane, supportive.
Oh, thank you. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? The personnel actions are approved. We're now going to move to committee reports and other items requiring board approval. Trustee Melanie Foster will now present the Committee on Budget and Finance report.
Thank you, President Stanley, and good morning. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board hereby reappoints Randy Cohen as an external member of the Investment Advisory Subcommittee for a three-year term commencing January 1st, 2021.
Could I have a motion in support?
I move.
Thank you. Could I have any discussion?
I'd just like to add that Randy has been a very active participant on IAS for several years, and he brings his insight from the financial world and objectivity, and he's just a valuable participant in IAS.
Thank you. I too will add that I very much appreciate his service and leading it. Any other discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board hereby authorizes the administration to proceed with the project entitled T.B. Simon Power Plant Modernization Medium Pressure Steam Boiler with a total project budget of $17,775,000.
We have the motion. Can I have a support?
Support.
Thank you. Any discussion?
Yeah, Dan Bowman's prepared to comment.
Good morning. This project is one of a series of improvements to modernize the power plant, optimize its operation, and provide lower cost, more sustainable energy for campus. The installation of the new package boiler will allow retirement of two 55-year-old boilers that are at the end of their useful life. It'll increase plant efficiency and reduce the risk of campus service disruption. Probably most important, the operation of the new boiler will result in a 2-3% fuel gas reduction, which equates to about $500,000 in annual fuel savings. There will also be a corresponding 15 million pounds of CO2 emission reductions each year. I'm happy to answer any other questions.
Any other discussion? Any questions? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Budget and Finance, I move that the board hereby authorizes the administration to negotiate and execute agreements and ancillary documents for the purpose of entering into a long-term affiliation with Henry Ford Health System upon such terms and conditions as may be acceptable to the president. And be it further resolved that the Board of Trustees hereby authorizes the administration to negotiate and execute agreements and ancillary documents and take all action necessary to form a new nonprofit corporation with Henry Ford Health System to carry out the purposes of the affiliation. And be it further resolved that the Board of Trustees hereby authorizes the president to make the initial appointments of individuals to act on the university's behalf as a member of the corporation and to represent the university on the new corporation's board of directors.
Could I have a support?
Support.
Thank you. Any discussion?
Norm Beauchamp, Executive Vice President for Health Sciences, is prepared to comment.
Thank you, Trustee Foster, and all the members of the board. As a land-grant institution, we are dedicated to improving health. We do this through our missions of education, research, and clinical care. This long-term affiliation with Henry Ford Health System will substantially increase our ability to improve our impactfulness across all of these missions. We look forward to the completion of the definitive agreement and the commencement of this important work. I'm prepared to answer any questions you may have.
I just want to echo Dr. Beauchamp's comments and say that I'm incredibly excited about this opportunity and believe, again, it's a wonderful opportunity at Michigan State University to partner with a leader in the field and do some, I think, very exciting work. Any other discussion?
The board has had several presentations and has been well informed about this for several months as the process has evolved.
So if there's no other discussion, I'd like to call the question. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries.
This concludes my report.
Thank you. Trustee Diane Byram will now present the Committee on Academic Affairs report.
Thank you, President Stanley.
As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Academic Affairs, I move the board hereby adopts the Presidential Performance Evaluation Policy included in your as Attachment A. I also want, move for support.
Do we have support?
Or
thank you. Any discussion?
I would just like to add my appreciation for trustees T-Bay and Kanaki Jefferson for their help with this through the Academic Affairs Committee. This is something that has long been needed by the board. It establishes a presidential review evaluation in policy, and it will require transparency by an annual report to the MSU community. So with that, I encourage a vote.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries.
In addition to discussing the Presidential Performance Evaluation Policy, the board received updates on both administrator and dean searches from President Stanley and Provost Woodruff. I would like to, at this time, read a statement on the first year evaluation of Dr. Samuel L. Stanley Jr., MD. Now, this was not required because our board policy wasn't in place yet, but going forward, this statement will be read on an annual basis following the presidential evaluation. This statement will also be posted on our Board of Trustees website. The Board of Trustees is charged with conducting an annual performance evaluation of the president. Led by the Committee on Budget and Finance, the first year evaluation of President Stanley was concluded this fall. The evaluation was conducted with the goal of evaluating the president's leadership in the context of continuing the success of the university, affirming with a clear understanding the priorities of the board, deepening the board's communication and relationship with the president, and fulfilling the governance responsibility of the board. President Stanley's first year assessment covered the 2019-2020 academic year and was focused on the following areas: initiate and continue to implement a comprehensive outreach program for the university, lead the university's response to the U.S. Department of Education and Department of Health and Human Services mandates in response to the Nassar and Strample cases, examine both the structure and composition of the senior leadership team with the goal of improving the effectiveness, efficiency, responsiveness, and quality of the university's administration, initiate a strategic planning process for MSU as a whole and for diversity, equity, and inclusion at MSU, begin to develop relationships and engage the MSU alumni and donors throughout the US and internationally, and a response to COVID-19. The evaluation process consisted of a self-assessment and input from trustees on the extent to which the performance goals were satisfied. The process also included the opportunity for board members to provide other feedback and recommendations. In sum, the board determined the president not met or exceeded his performance goals. The first year of any new presidency is a challenge, and President Stanley's first year at MSU was met with not only the challenges of leading the university out of an institutional crisis, but responding to the COVID-19 pandemic and the unforeseen disruptions to everything the faculty, staff, and students considered normal. The board then worked with the president to establish goals for next year. An annual evaluation of the president's performance in these areas will be performed again next year. In the future, a comprehensive evaluation, including input from diverse stakeholders, will be performed as well. Following the annual performance review, under the board's sole discretion, a bonus of up to 20% of the president's annual base salary may be considered based on the extent to which the performance goals have been satisfied. In light of the COVID-19 pandemic and the related financial impact on the university, action on the president's performance bonus was deferred by the board until the next fiscal year. This concludes my report. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we will hear a report from the Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance from Trustee Dan Kelly.
Thank you. As chairperson of the Trustee Committee on Audit, Risk, and Compliance, I move that the board hereby approve the following: a service agreement with Corporation for Digital Scholarship, an option agreement with ExoForce Robotics, Inc., a service agreement with Mid-Michigan Research, LLC, an option agreement with Motion Grazer AI, Inc., a service agreement with MW Apata Institute, and a license agreement with Will Win Games, Inc. All of the agreements are consistent with earlier public notice given by prior board meetings. The related term sheets are presented to the board for inclusion in its minutes. Is there a motion?
Support.
Support.
Thank you. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion, please signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? The motion carries.
This concludes my report.
Thank you. We will now hear from a report from the Committee on Student Life and Culture, Trustee Brianna Scott.
Thank you, President Stanley. The Committee on Student Life and Culture discussed proposed updates to the Counseling and Mental Health Services Fund. In September of 2019, the university established a new Counseling and Mental Health Services Fund. At that time, trustees identified a new fund administrator to better serve survivors and their families, including the ability to speak directly with dedicated trauma-informed representatives. Since that time, the new fund has been regularly evaluated and enhanced. This includes expanding eligible services to include telehealth, inpatient treatment, and pharmacy services, as well as services administered by a broader range of licensed health professionals. And we are pleased to announce that we are in the process of implementing additional enhancements, such as adding an online fillable reimbursement form and the coverage of additional prescriptions and service and support animals. We remain committed to supporting those in need of treatment and hope the regular review of and continued improvements to the fund will positively benefit those that it serves. Additional information about the fund can be found on the MSU Our Commitment webpage. I'd like to thank those committee members of the Student Life and Culture Committee, Trustees Tebay, Masalam, and Foster for their help in getting this done. And that concludes my report. Thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Scott. We'll now move to Chairperson's report and trustees' comments, and we'll begin with Trustee Diane Byron.
Thank you. I want to start by wishing everyone a happy holiday. I know this has been a very stressful year for students, faculty, and staff to online learning. Thank you for your persistence and for showing your Spartan spirit. I am hopeful that the vaccine will lead into a new year where we can rediscover our social interactions with each other and our lives can get back to a more normal cadence. I would like to congratulate Dr. Mary Finn as the new Dean of the College of Social Science and Dr. Kendra Chiruvo as the interim Dean for the Lyman Briggs College. This is also fall graduation week, and I want to extend my congratulations to the 2,600 MSU students who are now graduating with their undergraduate and graduate degrees. If IT would please show the scholarship slides at this time. This is the board meeting where we recognize all of the trustees scholarship awardees. The 29 graduating students whose names appear on the screen are the Fall 2020 Award recipients. The Board of Trustees scholarship awards are granted at each commencement to graduating seniors with a 4.0 cumulative grade point average. Congratulations to each one of our awardees, and you can see all of their names on the screen. We are excited about your future, and we know you will make a difference in the world because Spartans will. This is our final board meeting of 2020, and it's also a time when we say goodbye to two of our colleagues, Brian Masalam and Joel Ferguson. Brian, I want to read this resolution in your honor. on behalf of the entire Board of Trustees. Resolution honoring Brian Masalem, Michigan State University, December 18, 2020. The Michigan State University Board of Trustees today extends to Brian Masalem its deep appreciation for his service to the university, its students, faculty, staff, and stakeholders. Trustee Masalem joined the Michigan State University Board of Trustees in 2013. He serves currently on the Committee of Audit, Risk, and Compliance and the Committee on Student Life and Culture. His commitment to students has been reflected in his advocacy for affordable tuition, campus safety, university accountability, and survivors of sexual assault. MSU made significant strides in these areas during his trusteeship, including tuition rate freezes the past 3 years, the establishment of the Healing Fund, and many improvements to the university's relationship violence and sexual misconduct prevention and response efforts. Trustee Masalem is a dedicated Spartan, having earned his engineering degree from MSU and graduating cum laude while playing on the football team from 1992 through 1996. He earned academic All Big Ten honors 3 times and was the District 4 Academic All-American selection in 1996. In addition to his work for MSU, Trustee Masalem's leadership is reflected in his activities with business and community organizations, including service as co-chair of the Detroit Wayne County Stadium Authority. As a financial advisor and founding partner of Spartan Wealth Management, he has built a reputation of trust and commitment with his clients, as evident by his induction into the AXA Advisors Hall of Fame as one of their top advisors nationwide.
Diane, you're on mute.
Did I just go on mute?
Right when you said you talked about the AXA Advisors Hall of Fame. That's the
yes, they're trying to unmute you.
I apologize. Well, I do want everyone to hear all of this, so I will pick up from there. For his devotion to his alma mater, his commitment to serving the university and the state of Michigan, and for his many contributions as a member of the Board of Michigan State University's Board of Trustees, others in our trustees offer our gratitude to Brian Masalem. And Brian, you will receive a copy of this resolution and a very nice frame to honor your service here at Michigan State University. I personally want to say thank you. I know you will always remain a Spartan, and go green.
Go white.
And if I can get back to my notes. And Joel Ferguson, we are also saying goodbye to you. You've served this MSU University for 33 years, 6 terms as chairperson and 5 terms as vice chair. I want to personally say thank you for your service. Trustee Foster has served the longest with you as a colleague and a trustee on the board, and she has asked if she could read the resolution in your honor. So this will conclude my remarks. I will now turn it over to Trustee Foster for the reading of the resolution recognizing Trustee Joel Ferguson. Thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Byram. Joel, I'd like to thank you for your 33 years of service on the Michigan State University Board of Trustees. I am very honored to have served 16 years or half that time with you. We began our relationship as colleagues back in 1991, and that was a relationship that quickly turned into a binding and special friendship between you and me and our spouses, Joel and Anna. I proudly served as your vice chair on the board for 6 years. We have worked together in a collaborative and bipartisan way for 6 university presidents and shared the excitement and successes of many Spartan victories together. I sincerely encourage your successors to govern in the bipartisan and collaborative spirit that we've always shared. Your generosity at MSU and in the greater Lansing community is hallmark. I can honestly say there is no one who has done more to support teens and especially young men of color than you, Joel. You are a respected role model for your mentoring, encouragement, and support that has made a difference in so many lives. Most notably, perhaps, a teen by the name of Irvin Johnson, who you encouraged and counseled nearly 50 years ago. You have generously donated to many organizations in our community, including the Boys and Girls Club, the Lansing Promised, and you are the longest sponsor of Lansing youth basketball. President Bill Clinton honored you with the NAACP Lifetime Achievement Award. If there was only one word to describe you, Joel, it would be perseverance. You never give up. You always keep pushing for what you believe in. Our friendship is enduring, and I'm going to miss you on the board. But to quote you in your own words, the best is yet to come. Now I'd like to read the resolution. Resolution honoring Joel I. Ferguson, Michigan State University, December 18th, 2020. The Board of Trustees of Michigan State University today extends its sincere appreciation and best wishes to Trustee Joel I. Ferguson and proudly confers upon him the title of Trustee Emeritus. Trustee Ferguson was the first elected to the Michigan State University Board of Trustees in 1986 and returned to the board by the voters of the state of Michigan three times. During his tenure, he was elected by his fellow trustees to serve six terms as chairperson and five terms as vice chairperson. In recognition of that distinctive accomplishment, Trustee Ferguson is hereby honored by conferring upon him the additional title of Chair Emeritus of the Board of Trustees. His years on the board were characterized by steady growth in the university's enrollments, operations, and international stature. He participated in the hiring of four presidents, supported its most successful capital campaign, helped oversee countless improvements to the campus, and has been a tireless advocate for the university throughout his board membership. A few of his accomplishments include his fight for affordable tuition, his support for diversity, equal opportunities for all, and his efforts to ensure the rights of all Spartans would be protected. As a U.S. Marine Corps veteran, Trustee Ferguson graduated from MSU in 1965 with a BA degree in elementary education. He worked his way through college with a full-time job at Lansing-based Oldsmobile, where he honed his skills in working with people to advocate for improvements in their lives. He has long been active in Democratic politics on a local, state, and national level. A local trailblazer in the spheres of business and government, in 1966, at the age of 28, Trustee Ferguson was the first African-American and youngest person then elected to the Lansing City Council. He was a co-founder of FNS Development Company, owner and developer of many major office buildings in the Lansing area, and the developer of a multifamily residential complexes and senior housing projects throughout Michigan. Most recently, he is co-developer of the Red Cedar Project, a mixed-use project located in Lansing. He is the co-founder of Lansing television station WFSL-TV Channel 47 and the founder of Lansing's WLAJ-TV Channel 53. He was a founding organizer of Capital National Bank and was appointed by President Bill Clinton to the board of directors of the Federal Home Loan Mortgage Corporation, Freddie Mac. A dedicated philanthropist, today, Trustee Ferguson is the vice chair of the Blue Cross Foundation. As he departs the MSU board after an eventful 33 years, he carries with him the gratitude, admiration, and best wishes of his fellow trustees, who hereby publicly salute his stewardship, his leadership, and his friendship. He has led with unmatched distinction, integrity, and thoughtfulness. The board recognizes that the impact he has had sets a standard for leadership far into the future. His credentials as a Spartan and an MSU institution are firmly established, and his experience and counsel will be missed. Thank you, Joel. I'd also like to thank Brian Masalem for his time and service to the board and send my sincere best wishes to you, Brian, and your family. And at some point, I'd like to take a beer up on her offer to cook for me. Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Byram, does that conclude your remarks?
Yes, that concludes my remarks.
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Vice Chair Kelly.
All right. Thank you. Well, first of all, just very quickly, hopefully, I know with this virtual, it's difficult with all of these Zoom meetings and so forth, but hopefully we can do a better job on public comments. I've lived through cutting off public comment, and I don't think it's a good idea. So let's try to work in some kind of a warning. With that said, leading up to my thoughts to say goodbye to Joel and Brian, I realized that in less than 4 years, I've had to do this six times. So it tells you just how much of a changeover there's been. But unlike some of the other board members who have left, I'm sure we're going to continue to see both Brian and Joel because they love MSU. They're definitely a part of the culture here. So, I welcome that. First of all, with regard to Joel, I mean, as the resolution and some of the comments that have already been said, he had a huge impact on MSU. Everything from being involved to picking multiple presidents and coaches and ADs and provosts and everyone else along the line in MSU, he's had a huge impact. But from my perspective, it's really kind of a personal impact. From day one, Joel has accepted myself, Joel and Anna as well, accepted myself, my wife Kathleen, my family. He's always been gracious. And for that, as a personal thank you to Joel, I appreciate him. I appreciate his service to MSU, and I consider him a friend. Let me make some comments about Brian Mosalem. We probably couldn't be more different. But in reality, Brian portrays himself as a modern man. In reality, he has old-fashioned values, which I respect very much. He's loyal. He stays true to what he believes in, no matter how difficult that might be. And I saw it firsthand through some very difficult times here at MSU. Whether you agreed with him or not, he stayed true to what he believed. And I appreciate that and respect that. So for both of you, I consider you both friends. As I said, I'm sure we're going to see you in the future. And I look forward to that. And as a fellow board member, I just want to thank you for your service to MSU, which I know that both of you love very much. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you have anything further, Trustee Foster? Include your remarks. No. Okay, thank you. Trustee Kanaki Jefferson.
Thank you. Hi, good morning. So I want to start by congratulating and thanking both Kendra Spence Chevarel, appointed interim dean of Lyman Briggs College, and also Mary Finn, the new dean at the College of Social Science. So thank you to them for this service and congratulations to both of them for being put into those roles. I also want to wish farewell Trustees Ferguson and Mosalem. I have enjoyed getting to know both of you over my year now as part of this board. Trustee Mosalem in particular, I want to thank you for all that you did to help get me up to speed and share with me your knowledge and also being part of my effort to review many documents. You were often there with me with your sleeves rolled up as we slogged through them. And so I really appreciated that as a new board member coming on. And you both will be missed. I want to say congratulations to the students who are the Board of Trustees Scholarship Award recipients. That's just incredible anytime, but especially amidst a pandemic. And there are so many things that we have to be proud of at this institution, to look forward to. I'm mindful that we can really only truly do that, though, if we appropriately address our past at the same time. Briefly, I want to just mention a couple of comments that were shared in the public open statements. I always appreciate hearing concerns from survivors. My understanding is that service animals like the dog Mochi we heard about during public comments are covered by the Survivors Fund. And so I hope we can get that better clarified. And I also really appreciated the comments about the value of the Australian Royal Commission, the Truth Commission, if you will, that brought together testimony from survivors of sexual harm and misconduct. And I can tell you, in my own research as a scholar on the federal judiciary, I have looked to Australia as a comparison. Their high court, the equivalent of the US Supreme Court, had incidents of sexual misconduct. And the way that it was handled was to issue a formal apology and acknowledgement to the survivors, very similar to, I think, what's been described here. That's something that I recommend in my own research. I believe there's value in apology and acknowledgement in a truth commission type of format. And I appreciate the comments today because that makes me think this is something that perhaps we should be looking into here at this university. And that also leads me to the last set of remarks I'd like to focus on in my comments this morning. In December of 2019, a year ago now, I joined the Board of Trustees after Nancy Schuttling resigned over a disagreement amongst the board about whether or not to release a body of documents related to the Nassar scandal that Michigan State University claimed were privileged. Although the board approved an independent review of these documents in June of 2019, it later declined to move forward. I understood from conversations with survivors and others from the MSU community that it was important to them to know whether these documents contained information that could help prevent something like the Nassar scandal from ever happening again. While it typically would not be an appropriate role for a trustee to review documents like this, I asked if I could do so, given the special circumstances, and I was provided full and complete access to them. I've now completed my review, and I'd like to explain how I went about it, why it took so long, and what I learned. First, how I went about conducting the review. I am a licensed lawyer in Michigan, but I am not Michigan State's lawyer, and I did not review the documents as a lawyer. In other words, I was not reviewing them to determine whether privilege was properly claimed, whether document redaction was appropriate or that sort of thing. And I would note that District Court Judge Richard Ball did this review in 2019 and determined that most documents were appropriately not produced and ordered disclosure of just a few that did need to be turned over. I limited my review to searching for information that the public, and particularly survivors of the Nassar scandal, would want to know. And for my purposes as trustee, I also reviewed these documents to determine whether the board could implement governance, policies, or procedures to prevent the recurrence of a tragedy like this. Second, why it took me so long. I'm a law professor. I am a mother of two children. I am a wife. I had to fit this document review in and around my professional teaching, speaking, and writing obligations, as well as my family commitments. I began my review in early 2020, and I was able to make good progress in what was my semester break from teaching. But being a trustee is a volunteer role, and one that I didn't have much time to adjust my schedule for, since my appointment followed on the heels of another trustee's resignation. And when COVID struck, finding time became much more difficult. My review also took longer than I had hoped because it turned out the total number of documents was not 6,000 as had been reported by the media, but actually 9,769 documents, nearly 4,000 more than what I had anticipated. Some documents included numerous pages, sometimes dozens of pages for one document. So I now have reviewed far more than 10,000 pages. And now third, what I learned. As part of the vetting process before my appointment, I had a remarkable and sobering opportunity to speak with survivors who believed that learning about the substance of these documents could be helpful, both to understand what happened in the past and to create conditions for leaders at the university and concerned members of the public to ensure that nothing like this ever happens again. I cannot possibly claim to understand how any survivor of the Nassar abuse feels, but I want each of them to know that I heard the frustrations voiced over how the proposal for an independent review of the documents was handled. And I wanted to do all within my power as a trustee to be responsive to the survivors' concerns, which is why I decided to personally review the documents. I can't speak about any specific document reviewed because I am treating them as privileged, as previously determined by Judge Ball, as I explained earlier in my remarks. I can report, however, that what I learned from these documents is consistent with information that is already in the public domain. The best resources for understanding who knew what and when, and what steps were taken in response are the following documents, all publicly available. One, the March 29th, 2018 letter from Miller Canfield to the Michigan House of Representatives. Two, the September 1st of 2020 memorandum to the United States Department of Education for Office of Civil Rights regarding Lawrence Nassar Employee Action Review. And three, the September 1, 2020 memorandum to the US Department of Education Office for Civil Rights regarding William Strample Employee Action Review. Those public documents are not necessarily prescriptive, though, in thinking about all that we could possibly do going forward. I believe, as the survivors surely do, that we must fully embrace the reality that structures in place at the university were not an adequate safeguard against the kind of abuse that Nassar inflicted. And accordingly, I propose several measures for the future. These are things that need to be done in addition to reforms that I acknowledge were already underway before I joined the Board of Trustees as the university was responding to the Nassar situation. So first, I discovered as part of my document review that Michigan State did not have an official policy in place for the trustees' review of the president. Best practices for university governance call for both an annual review of the president's performance and every 3 to 5 years, a comprehensive review with wide-ranging internal and external input. I raised those concerns in the midst of the document review earlier this year over the past few months, and I'm pleased that my fellow Board of Trustees members heard them, worked together, and in fact, you saw us this morning approve unanimously an official policy for presidential performance. This policy will be transparent and publicly available, as will the outcomes of performance reviews. Second, I want to call for more uniformity, transparency, and timeliness across colleges and departments regarding the actions taken when discipline occurs after the finding of sexual misconduct. And related to this, I want to see a more transparent process to ensure accountability for situations where an investigation into alleged employee sexual harassment or misconduct is not found to have risen to the level of an official finding under university policy, but nonetheless flags inappropriate behavior for which changes in behavior or policy are warranted. The administration is currently working on reforms to implement these recommendations to address my concerns, and I will urge that these reforms are made public and transparent once they are fully established. I want to acknowledge that the responsibility for all of this falls heavily upon the provost's office, and I want to make clear that even though she has been here for only a short time and had to start her work in the midst of a pandemic, Provost Woodruff has already taken my concerns very seriously. She has been very responsive already, and I have high confidence in her ability to do the very difficult work needed for making the requisite structural changes in this institution. We are so very fortunate that she decided to join us, and I look forward to continuing to work with her. Finally, I recommend that the board release these documents for an independent review, after which the body conducting the review would issue a public report along the lines of what the board had previously approved back in June of 2019. I mentioned earlier that I cannot even begin to understand the trauma survivors experienced. But as I read through these documents, I became convinced that a university as great as ours can do much better. That was driven home to me, especially by the MSU Museum exhibit created last year, which chronicles the very disturbing series of events and omissions that facilitated the sick conduct that NASA displayed. The exhibit's creators should be commended for preserving that timeline, as it reminds us that there were several points along the way where, with more vigilance, this crisis may have been averted, or at least not drawn on as long as it did. I hope that the exhibit is made a permanent part of the MSU Museum collection and that these documents are preserved with it. We must remember what happened and why so that we can prevent its recurrence. The university and its leaders have an opportunity to equip this institution with additional tools to ensure accountability and continued attentiveness, intervening early in the face of inappropriate conduct. There is no better way to start that process than by recognizing that the survivors, had they not acted courageously, may have continued to suffer in silence. So that is how I conducted the review, why it took the amount of time it did, and what I learned. I don't know whether the Board of Trustees will be revisiting the independent review discussions in the future. My hope is that we do so, especially given that we will have two new trustees joining us in January. I can promise you that for the remainder of my time as a trustee, I will use what I've learned from my review of these documents to fight for the structural changes needed to hopefully prevent sexual misconduct from ever occurring in the first place. But if it does, to make sure that the reporting process for it does not cause further harm to the individuals involved, and that discipline is handled fairly, uniformly, and transparently across all colleges and departments. And that concludes my remarks.
Thank you. Trustee Scott.
Thank you. I'd first like to acknowledge the persons that spoke on behalf of the Swimming and Dive program. Over the last few weeks, I've had the opportunity to talk with quite a few of them and communicate with even more. And it is my hope that while they may not like the decision that has been made, that they do understand that significant change was needed to create the fiscal stability for MSU athletics and to provide the support that we believe is essential for our student athletes to excel. And I know I'm not alone in thanking all of you, our former athletes and our current, that have been affected by this and for all that they've given to the Swimming and Dive program. I'd also like to just thank Trustee Kanaki Jefferson for what she just articulated following the examination of now 9,000 documents. She plowed full speed ahead through privileged documents at lightning speed compared to the rest of us that are still going through those documents now. And I believe using her profound experience and expertise in ethics and the law to provide us with an analysis of the procedural policies and failures of oversight that allowed Larry Nassar and William Strample to operate the way that they did for so long with impunity. As I've said from the beginning, I continue to believe that the public should have the right to view the documents once all of the related litigation is over. In the interim, I hope that it brings the public some solace knowing that someone with Trustee Kanaki Jefferson's integrity and foresight has ensured and will continue to ensure that there is no cover up by the university. I do also wanna say farewell to Trustee Masalam. He's been a part of the leadership of the university for so long and had to make some really tough decisions that were not always appreciated. And through it, I believe he's always tried to do what he felt was best and to ensure that the public knew where he stood. And it was you and Trustee Byram who were the first to admit in the mistake of hiring John Engler. And I really believe that that took some guts. And for that, I respect you. I thank you for your dedicated service to MSU. And I wish you the best as you now return to private life with your family. And to Trustee Chair Emeritus Ferguson, the significance of having the opportunity, Joel, to serve with you, someone who was a trustee when I was a student at MSU, someone who's been a part of so many important moments in history of our great university, has not escaped me. I just wanna thank you so much for being willing to finally take my phone call once I was sworn in as a trustee. That's kind of an inside joke between Joel and I. No, seriously, I just, know from my very first meeting, you have unselfishly been a source of support, encouragement, and mentorship in my role as trustee. And I want to thank you for seeing something special in me and being willing to step down from the Presidential Search Committee to allow me as a rookie trustee to have that opportunity to serve in such an important role. Your many contributions to the success of our university in the area of academics, increased enrollment of minority students, the hiring of Coach Izzo, the push for the Multicultural Center, the Women's Center, and other DEI initiatives, improvements of facilities all across of our campus, et cetera, have contributed immensely to the university's success over the last decades. You have worked assiduously, and now it's time to enjoy all that you've labored for over all of the years and live life happily without public scrutiny and stress. Words are not enough, Joel, to express how much you will be missed. And I pray that God continues to grant you sound health, mercy, and blessings. May you find life after the Board of Trustees a happy moment with endless games of golf, sweet memories, and joy, my friend. I'd also like to thank all of our outgoing seniors and those that were granted scholarships. Congratulations to you all. I hope to be part of the virtual celebrations coming up. And I'd like to also wish everyone a very happy holiday and a happy holiday and a happy new year. I was going to say Merry Christmas. Thank you. That concludes my remarks.
Thank you. Trustee Tebay.
We're going out of order, so I'm confused. Usually Brian and Joel have gone first, but I'm assuming they're going last and totally understand that. I first want to thank Dean or Provost Woodruff in the appointment of Dean Mary Finn. I think that is a fabulous choice for our social science college. And Mary, I wish you all the best and I'm looking forward to working further with you. I also would like to congratulate all of the students that received the Board of Trustees scholarship and commend you for all of the hard work that you have put in during your time here. Also would like to address our public participation and echo what my colleague Dan had said. And I apologize to Valerie that you were cut off and hope to know that you are welcome to reach out to me to continue the conversation. And I appreciate you taking the time this morning to address us. I also would like to address the Healing Fund and apologize for how long it has taken for us to sort of get this in a spot that we can sort of feel at least good about the support that you all are receiving from the Healing Fund. And I wanted to thank Ashley and her mother for spending time this morning educating on the service dogs. I have gotten numerous emails from other survivors on the importance of service dogs and how important and monumental they can be for a survivor's life, and have since been working with my colleagues to make sure that that is getting covered. And Ashley, I really appreciate you taking the time this morning to continue to educate our board on why service dogs are so important. And I'm so glad that you have Mochi in your life to support you and make you feel comfortable facing the world. So thank you for spending time with us this morning to educate us. I also would like to thank Trustee Kanaki for taking leadership and really reviewing these documents. And I'm a little jealous. She's a much faster reader than I am. I am still trying to get through the documents, but that was not able to do them in the time that she was able to. But I appreciate her taking the leadership and addressing these documents publicly and allowing for those that, you know, were curious to know that we are looking at them and that it's not been forgotten. I also would like to wish Trustee Ferguson the best. You have literally been on the board my entire life. So those 33 years of my life, you have been a board member at Michigan State. You have signed both my diplomas, my bachelor's and my master's. So you will certainly not be forgotten, but I wish you all the best. And lastly, I would just like to say thank you to Trustee Masalam, whom I definitely consider a friend, who took me under his wing. It was my big brother on the board. Your friendship has meant a lot to me. And I appreciate that you've always stuck up for what you believe in and has always fought to do what's right. And I also want to thank you for taking my family under your wing and taking my dad down on the field and making his day and his year spending time with him and introducing him to folks. And I appreciate you always taking the time to care and look out for my family and myself. And so it will be sad not having you here. But I know, as others have said, that you are not going anywhere and your devotion to Michigan State is true. And so I look forward to continue our friendship and seeing what comes next for you. So thank you for all that you've done. And that's it for me.
Thank you. Trustee Masalam.
So first, let me congratulate the new appointments, the new deans, Mary Finn, who I had the pleasure of working with on the presidential search committee. I'm so happy for you. I got to know you pretty well and very, very excited for you. Valerie Von Frank, I want to apologize for you for being cut off. I think we need to do a better job of that to make sure. You know, I've gotten to know Valerie pretty well. Valerie is very, very reasonable. Valerie wants to work with those trustees that want to work on reform. And I trust Valerie, and I encourage every trustee to reach out to Valerie and the parent group, because they want to move this university forward. They don't want to burn the place down. And I think it's very important that we view them as, you know, in collaboration as opposed to against. Brian Tarrant, I apologize to you for being cut off as well too. That's we've already voiced it, and we hope for that not to happen in the future. And I know the parents do want to work with the board and moving this university forward. Trustee Kanaki Jefferson, you're awesome. That is, it's been a pleasure getting to know you and you know, getting updates from you as you're reading through those documents, and just your diligence and your thoughtfulness and you know, your just how measured you are and your approach and in which you viewed those documents and really a lot of the other policies around the university when as it comes to you know, Title IX reports, right, where there's no finding. You know, you're always, okay, so what's the next step? What's HR going to do? How are we going to remedy this? I think that those are things that are very, very important that go along with changing the culture. And I really, really want to thank you for that. I think that's something that, you know, that we talk about privately. That's something we need to look at. You know, so what's next? Just because somebody wasn't found to be responsible, how are we remedying that situation? To the survivors, I will continue to stay in touch. Many of you that I am in touch with, I've made lifelong friends. I will always advocate on your behalf. I will always support you in any way that I can. And I don't mean to speak to you as a homogenous group. I know there's several different that I speak to, but I want you to know that this is not politics to me. This is real life. This, you know, as I've stated before, we are temporary placeholders of a guardian of an we are guardians and temporary placeholders of an institution that will live in perpetuity. This title will not define me. It has never defined me. I am not going anywhere, exactly as many of you have said. I am a Spartan, will always be a Spartan, and will be actively engaged with or without the title. I want to congratulate Dr. Vassar, Rima Vassar, who I've gotten to know very, very well running with her. I'm telling you, she is absolutely wonderful, and she is brilliant, and she is just, she really became somebody that I'd seek advice from, just analyzing and understanding people. She's been very, very, very enjoyable. She's very, very intelligent. And somebody that I think you the board will look forward to working with. I also want to congratulate Pat O'Keefe. You know, and I know he's you know, he made some comments about not knowing what the acronym DEI stands for and ran quote unquote a conservative campaign. You know, I also think it's important that you guys realize that he's also starting a mezzanine fund that's about to raise almost $200 million that focuses on DEI and African-American owned businesses. So, you know, there's another side to this on the business end, you know, that I think he's been very, very supportive. A lot of us like to, use the acronym and the term as a buzz talk, but he's actually doing it. So he's ready to come in and make his mark here. So, you know, for what it's worth, I will always be a Spartan. It is something to me that I will hold dearly. I also want to congratulate, I felt like I, through MSU's darkest hour, that I did stay true to myself. And to me, my greatest accomplishment personally is that I made my parents proud. I honored my mother's legacy and I made my dad proud. The only ones happy right now are my kids. They were cheering when I lost because they want to spend time with their dad. So, well, maybe they're all happy, but my kids are particularly happy. So, you know, but I will always be engaged. You know, I want to thank John Ambrose as well and his team, just looking at what they've done through admissions and how through COVID, you know, and all the work that he's done. He's got a great team over there. I really think it's important that we do thank John Ambrose for the job that he's done and admissions has done with all the challenges, which leads me to my last point. And I have to stay true to myself. Leads me to the last point about Jimmy Cotter. Jimmy Cotter was the former admissions director who was relieved of his duties for no public reason given, no evaluation over 5 years. Nobody said a word as to why he was moved. And just to kind of give you an idea of the kind of impact it's had on its family, every time a story comes up where, you know, the Austin Robertson story, Jimmy Cotter gets calls from reporters. This recent one about employees where there's pornographic material on their computer, he gets calls. Is that the reason why that you were removed as admissions director? And I think it's important that we set the record straight and understand that what his family has endured is not right. You know, my trusteeship, it's a title, it's fake. It's not gonna change who I am and it's not gonna change my life. But he gave 36 years to this university, 36 years of his life. And I think it's important that we recognize that and we acknowledge. And to be quite frank with you, Engler removed him because he complained about if you shift our numbers to out of state, it's going to decrease your minority enrollment. Engler didn't like to hear that. And that's why he was removed. So, you know, and everybody ran and hid and never said a word about Jimmy Cotter. And nobody publicly acknowledged it. And I'm here to say, Jimmy, I'm sorry. And I'm sorry for what your family endured. You've been a great ambassador to this university. You deserve that respect, deserve to be honored one day. And, you know, I will go on with my life. You gave your life to Michigan State. And I think that needs to be recognized. So anyway, I'm not going anywhere. And my one last thing is big announcement coming soon. Stay tuned. Thank you. Go Green.
Thank you. Next, we will hear from Trustee Ferguson. Joel, if you can come off mute. Just a minute, please. We're working with IT to get them unmuted.
For those of you who may be waiting, we're just experiencing technical problems and waiting for Trustee Ferguson to get on.
Would you guys like me to keep going? I'm just kidding.
I do want to take this opportunity, as my colleagues did, to or as the board did rather, to again apologize for the technical difficulties we've had today, and also for our failure to, or rather, the cutting off of one of the individuals, of Valerie von Frank, at the end. And we will work to make sure that we get this better, and I do apologize for that.
President Stanley, was there a slide deck for Dr. Moran's presentation?
There was, and unfortunately that didn't get on as well. So we had a number of breakdowns today. So we'll do better in the future. But if the board would like, we will certainly share that slide deck with them. That work was really impressive.
Yes, please.
Maybe Joel is calling back in again. I don't see him now, so.
Yes, Joel's working on reconnecting.
Okay. This is one of the challenges of Zoom. Most of the time, I think generally it works pretty well, but occasionally we do run into issues.
So two commencements this afternoon, correct?
Yes, and I encourage people to join. Three very distinguished speakers. Joel, are you with us? Joel? Still can't hear him.
Okay, can you hear him?
Yes. Tell me when to speak, I will.
We can hear you.
Okay. This is amazing. On two TV stations, it just illustrates that I really hired good people to handle everything technical. How I messed up when they get this mute. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Mute your computer or your phone.
I can't believe this, but I want to say this about Brian first. Brian LaSalle's a three-headed person. One was Michigan State University, family, and community. And when he says he's not going anywhere, he's going to stay greatly involved in all those areas. And I'm pleased that I've served with him, and I know there's a lot more things that are going to happen in his life than what he's going to be doing. And I'm just saying that we have a foundation for a lot of things. And Renee, I had in writing everything I was going to say today, but my goodness, you killed my speech. I was going to talk about you and the things you said and how you presented yourself today. I can't improve on that. I mean, Michigan State University is very blessed to have you on our board, and we know we got a foundation for what's going to be happening in the future. Brianna, she mentioned they step on the side of the search committee for her. Well, I'm smart enough to know when we have addition by subtraction. If I mean we had her coming, and we had just a tremendous search committee, and very blessed we are, because they're living good people, and having Sam as our president, truly we have a foundation for our best years to come. And I can't help but talk about the leadership of Diane Byron, because she was aware there were noise about appointments of presidents and so forth, and even in the state of Michigan we had an issue. But her and not only leading the search committee, but right at the end, her making certain that we didn't have any voice vote, that we had a roll call. So each one of us went on the record that we only for the present we have today, with so much of interest and so much for the students and the foundation for really making our best leadership. And there's a big thing to really say, and it applies to President Stanley and this board and this university, is you win with good people.
Thank you so much, Trustee Ferguson, and thank you so much again for everything you've done for Michigan State University, and again, personally, for your friendship and outreach to me since I've come to the university. I very much appreciate it. And again, as we've said for both you and Trustee Masalam, I look forward to working with you in the future. And again, very, very glad to have had the chance to serve with you, if only for a year and a half. So I think that concludes our business. Could I have a motion to adjourn, please?
So moved.
Support.
Thank you. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. Again, be safe, please, and happy holidays to everyone. Thank you.
All right. Happy holidays.
Bye-bye, everyone. Bye. Be well.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.